Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Kay Patrick, one of your hosts today, together with my co-host, Pat Schlaubaum. Hello, Pat.
Hello.
You'll be giving us an update on the resistance movement that you've been following, known as the Standing Rock Protectors from the Dakota Access Pipeline. I understand that this protest movement, the Standing Rock Protectors, started as a small grassroots movement of Native American Dakota tribes, but it has snowballed and maybe could be considered a nationwide movement now?
Or even international.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, the Amnesty International has weighed in also, in the United Nations. So
right, oh, right, the UN, yes.
It is a growing enterprise, yes. Hello, Kate, and hello to you, our listener. Before we get into the details of the Standing Rock Protectors, here's a quick summary of the rest of today's show. We'll be hearing an interview with local Nevada craftsman who makes custom bass guitars, and he, too, is building an international reputation. And then we'll be speaking with Edna Clinton, the president of the local chapter of the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And finally, Allison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau will be making her regular monthly report. This time she'll be telling us about the many recreational opportunities coming up this fall.
Thank you, Pat. And now, what news have you got for us from the Standing Rock Protectors?
Carolyn Ratzesberger is a lawyer from Ames. She has been assisting the one of the sacred sites. I guess there's three small villages between the Cannonball River and the Missouri River up in North Dakota. There was a plan to go underneath the Missouri River north of Bismarck, and the local people said, well, that may have a deleterious effect on our drinking water if it should leak. We think you should go south of town, on the other side of town, downstream from the town of Bismarck. And lo and behold, that's right in the Standing Rock Reservation, where there were treaties that were designed to protect that land, those sacred sites, and that water that the Bakken Pipeline seems to be plowing ahead without the environmental impact statements.
And this is oil from fracking, I believe.
Yes,
it
is. It's part of the new world order of trying to extract tar sands. You know, where upwards of a half a million gallons will be going through not only that part of North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and into Illinois. And unfortunately, I guess with man-made construction projects, it's not if it will leak, but when will it leak? So it has a desecration of sacred sites with the laying the pipe, but it's pretty much all about clean water and what this impact would be in the event of a catastrophic blowout or leakage that would affect our drinking water.
And this is a private company with this pipeline, so they, you know, they shouldn't. Many people would argue
it kind of boggles the mind that that a private company that would receive a governmental status, if you will, to impose eminent domain not only on the Native communities in North and South Dakota, but on our local farming group right here in Iowa.
Now, you've been getting these updates from the lawyer, Carolyn Raffensperger, with some difficulty, I believe, because the cell phones don't always work.
Yeah, they have scramblers that are occurring, trying to essentially disrupt.
So it's deliberate.
The word getting
it's sort
out,
of nefarious, yet, deliberate.
And yet the word has gone out, and more people are arriving on site. And it is a really
right.
A,
I noticed
grueling.
Clyde Bell. Do you say Belcourt? Is that how you pronounce his name? Of AIM, he's an old man now. He's about 80 odd. He showed up there. He was famous in the.
Yeah, and there's a chief Arvo Looking Horse, who is the keeper of the White Buffalo Calfwoman Bundle, and he was brought into the picture when it involved the Keystone mm-hmm. pipeline, an earlier pipeline effort that was determined to be not a good plan. And so now he is involved with this protection of mm-hmm. the Missouri River and the Standing Rock community is where it's originating, but there will be coming up this weekend or this Wednesday, August 31st, in Pilot Mound. There will be an action. They're asking all people and supporters that want to protect the Des Moines River from the Bakken pipeline to come out to the community center in Pilot Mound at 9 a.m. On Wednesday, August 31st. And Carolyn Raffensperger will be assisting in that effort.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be asking for a lot of supporters, if you can't make it out at 9, from 1 until 4, to stand in support of people, the farming community that are opposing the eminent domain will be involved with that. And then, gosh, everybody else that derives our drinking water from the Des Moines River, you know, in Boone.
So in the morning session, there'll be a nonviolent training, resistance training.
Yes, and yeah. And there has been a lot of national figures now, Bernie Sanders for one, that has weighed mm-hmm. in and felt if the Keystone pipeline was kind of inappropriate, don't we make this transition away from oil? There are alternatives to oil.
Right.
We have, you know, our wind energy and now our solar energy. There are alternatives to the energy that oil provides, and yet it's no point in growing into this. It's time to leave carbon in the ground,
right,
I guess, is
right.
where they're going with right. this. And we should realize that the carbon is affecting our climate when we have 31-inch rainfalls and 8-inch rainfalls and just recently up in northeast Iowa, my goodness. So
yeah, many more extreme weather events, yeah.
I think we're good.
A lot of the groups signed on to this, including the one I worked for. She's a member of the Science and Environmental Health Network. Angela Bibbins is quoted here. They misspelled her name, but the quote sounds just like her wise self. So we've had some action. We've had some drama. There's been a federal court case that will be decided September 9th, I think.
Now, is that court case, is it about the water or is it about, because there's a business of an ancestral site, a historic site?
Well,
or is it both?
It's both. There's always sacred sites associated with the rivers from a historical perspective, but they're feeling that pipeline under a major river like the Cannonball River and then the Missouri River, it's supposed to go under the Missouri twice before it ever comes to Iowa, that is the threat of the spill, that things will be in jeopardy.
Right.
Just even trying to have that situation of oil so close to their water, and they're treating their water as a sacred entity in their existence, and there were treaties to protect their land and their water. So the federal court case will determine if those treaties are still applicable.
Right. So if not, that'll be another broken treaty.
Yes, there's quite a bit on the line, if you will.
Now, I understand they wrote to the president about this, too.
Yes, and, you know, he did wade in to the Keystone pipeline situation, and they're assuming that why would this be acceptable if the Keystone was not, other mm-hmm. than it was going to go through Nebraska, and there were a lot of the ranchers that had discussions about the applicability of the eminent domain issue.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, this is probably what the listeners might be most familiar with here in Iowa.
Dakota Access, maybe people in Iowa are more familiar with calling it the Bakken Pipeline.
Yeah, that's a real good point.
Yeah. I don't know if this, just the section that would go through Iowa is just referred to as the Bakken Pipeline or or how that works?
Well, it's the Bakken oil fields up in North Dakota, mm-hmm. so it's how it gets that.
Mm-hmm.
The Dakota Access, they kind of usurped using that name. The Dakota nations are pretty offended that they would take their name and try to apply it.
Oh, I see.
It's simple matter.
So they would prefer the term Bakken.
Carolyn goes on, at the heart of the precautionary principle is the idea that in the face of uncertainty and the likelihood of harm, we take precautionary action and action to prevent the harm, and the harm meaning that possibly the pipeline would leak. And,
right.
And it's, I guess in anything man-made, there's a feeling that it's not if it will leak, it's when.
Right.
So how are we going to deal with that? So action to prevent harm is where she's going with their activities up there. The precautionary principle is a translation of a German word that actually means forecaring, F-O-R-E, forecaring, taking action to prepare for what might be a difficult future. And Carolyn learned a lot about preparing for a difficult future when she was living in North Dakota. The winters up there are not easy on humans. And every day of the camps, we get up and face the weather, the law, unpredictable humans, and our own immutable drive to protect the Missouri River and future generations. We are for caring.
Mm-hmm.
And Carolyn wasn't able to join us this morning. She's on the road. She is returning from the Standing Rock Reservation area up in the Dakotas to attend what's coming up on Wednesday, a major gathering for all those that have a resistance to the Bakken pipeline. And so Wednesday, August 31st, at the Pilot Mound Community Center, and that is northwest of Boone. It's right on the Des Moines River. So it's at 112 South Pilot in Pilot Mound, kind of on the southwest corner of town. There's going to be some nonviolence training from 9 until noon. And then for people really hoping there'll be a turnout for the support from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m.
Now, and the support will be of what nature?
Well, there's the potential for conflict and arrest. They're just starting to go underneath the Des Moines.
Oh, right, I've read this. So they want people who've got a clean record
it needs to be discussed. It's concerning effect. Yeah, it's time to, I guess, for everybody to kind of put their cards on the table,
right,
if you will. And so that'll be Pilot Mound. Any listeners that are involved with this, I'm sure there'll be a lot of the eminent domain abuse protectors, a lot mm-hmm. of the farming community that's feeling mm-hmm. like this is a privately owned pipeline. It's not as if the utilities board is going to have any sort of governance over something that's really, really private. But they seem to have made their case to put this pipeline diagonally across Iowa. And yet they're has not been an environmental impact statement. There are protectors that are feeling that this is a worthwhile for everybody to figure out mm-hmm. where we're going mm-hmm. with the alternative to oil. We have an oil industry that we've obviously been pretty beholden to. There's quite a movement underway for the alternatives to the oil industry energy sources. And they feel like there's alternatives to oil. There's no alternative for clean water.
Right. Yeah, I noticed Bernie Sanders has come out about this.
Bernie, made a policy statement.
Said, right. Scientists say if we do not aggressively transition our energy system away from fossil fuels towards energy efficiency and sustainable energy, the planet we leave our children will be a much less habitable place. And he concludes, I join with the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and the many tribal nations fighting this dangerous pipeline.
Mm-hmm. So the Standing Rock Nation got put right in the crosshairs, if you will. The pipeline was supposed to go north of Bismarck and then have been upstream from Bismarck. So they said, we should go downstream, and then the only people will impact are the Standing Rock individuals. So it's pretty offensive.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
In many different ways. Everything's a trade-off. And I think the loud voice is it's time to address climate change And it's also time to ensure that we have clean water for the future.
Right.
So Pilot Mound on Wednesday, August 31st, 9 a.m. at the Pilot Mound Community Center.
Okay, well, thank you, Pat.
This is Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. And we've just been going over the update of the Standing Rock Protectors, protecting their ancestral sites and natural resources from the North Dakota Access Pipeline. And now, for a complete change of subject, Kay, let's hear about the work of local craftsman Andrew Drake of Nevada, who's developed a business handcrafting bass guitars.
Yes, I've selected segments from a much longer interview that KHOI's webmaster, Ron Carson, had with Andrew. Andrew's business, Drake Custom Bass and Guitar, is building a national and even international reputation. But in this first segment of the interview, Andrew modestly confesses, it's quite amusing actually, that it was his own limitations as a musician that led the way to his beginning the business of building custom-made bass guitars.
I actually didn't start playing bass myself until I was in my 20s. And once I did, I made the mistake of not taking lessons. So I kind of was self-taught, learned a lot of bad techniques, things like that. Well, because of that, I wasn't able to really play my instrument effectively, and so I started taking it apart, reading books on how to make it play better, things like that. Instead of actually improving my technique, I was more tinkering with the mechanical workings of a bass guitar. And eventually, I got to the point where, well, okay, I've taken this thing apart, I put it back together so many times, maybe I'll just try putting a new neck on it and things like that. So I tinkered around for a while, and then I got to the point where maybe I'll try to build my own neck. So I take the instrument apart, I started tracing around it, you know, basically trying to copy the parts, and I made my first instrument that way. And from there, I just kept on getting more and more technical, better at my woodworking skills, to the point where I said, okay, I'm going to actually try to build a real instrument from ground up. And from there on, I started having people say, hey, can you build me one? And that's kind of how the ball got rolling.
Did you ever learn how to play bass?
Yeah, but if I ever decided to take lessons, I think I'd have an instructor to be pretty upset because I don't read music myself. It's all pretty much by ear and muscle memory. I don't consider myself a super accomplished bass player, but I do enjoy it, and I do play in bands occasionally.
Well, Andrew Drake's business flowered from those humble beginnings. And in this next segment, we learn something about what makes Drake bass guitar, that's his business, what makes Drake bass guitar special.
You're not doing big production runs of anything, is that correct?
No, I think my personal best is about 23 instruments a year, and that's from scratch. I do a lot of repairs, restorations. I might make a new neck for somebody's guitar or bass, so that's not necessarily building an entire instrument, but there's a lot of that work as well. I also do refurbs on my old instruments. I have instruments dating clear back to 2005. Some of those have been on the road a bit, a little bit worn, a bit dinged up, so sometimes they come back in to get, you know, the finish touched up or something that's been broken, fixed. And a lot of the ones predating 2010, that's when I actually officially started my company, and previous to that, I did not have logos on the instruments. So that's one of the upgrades that I get a lot of the old ones back in. They want a Drake logo on it. There's only about four out there that don't have the logo now.
Oh, collector's items, probably.
That's what I say.
Who buys custom bases from you?
Basically, my customers, I call them professionals. You may not have heard of them, but they do make a lot of their income from playing music, so they need reliable instruments. And a lot of times it's people who need a certain specific spec for an instrument, and they can't get that from the big box store makers. You know, you can go to, they all have custom shops, but a lot of times you can go to, let's say, not to throw out too many names, but let's say Fender Custom Shop, and they will build you something, but it'll be within their requirements and their specifications. Whereas I will pull out a blank sheet of paper, and we can make it any shape, with any different neck size, electronic configuration, number of strings. So it's basically the things that you can't just go to Guitar Center and buy off the wall. That's what I specialize in.
So these are players that have played long enough that they have particular preferences and are looking to you to provide that.
Correct, correct. Some of my customers are like myself. I have arthritis myself, so I have to have necks that are carved a certain way just to make it more comfortable for my hands. So I've made necks like for a five-string bass, which is normally a pretty wide neck. I've made narrow ones for guys that have small hands like I do or have hand problems or injuries to alleviate some carpal tunnel issues, things like that. There's a lot of reasons why people might seek out my instruments over something they can buy in the store.
The ergonomics?
Ergonomics, weight. I have a couple customers I know that they have back issues, so therefore when we design an instrument for them that has to be under a certain poundage, the way it's strapped, strap will hook onto the instruments are important because you want it to be where you can play your lower notes without bending your wrist too tight, things like that. So
the balance of the instrument?
Yep, balance is very, very important. If the neck wants to keep pointing towards the floor, then you're spending a lot of energy holding the neck up that you could be using that energy for playing.
Would we know anybody that owns one of your basses?
Somebody actually, from... most of my sales are either East, West Coast, North America, Canada, basically, are my main. And I do sell some internationally. There are Drake instruments in about 25 countries. However, locally, there's a couple names. If you're familiar with the Abbey Normal band.
Abbey Normal, one of my favorite bands in the Central Iowa area.
Well, Tim West, the bass player.
Tim West.
He owns two Drakes. Awesome player. Awesome player.
Well, I can testify to that. I've seen Abbey Normal a bunch of times here, and I thoroughly enjoy the band, especially the bass playing, Tim West's bass playing. He's a, I would say, very clean player.
Yeah, he has great technique. His slap style, I don't hear him hitting bad notes. I don't hear fret rattle. I mean, I've seen a lot of guys play slap bass that are just very marginal. He's wonderful. I'm very proud to have built instruments that he plays live, and he plays live weekly. So
continuing the topic of what's special about Drake bass guitars, in this next segment, Andrew talks about the different woods from which he makes his guitars, his careful treatment of the wood, and how his concern with conservation impacts his choices of wood.
Woods do matter quite a bit with an instrument. I'm firmly in the camp where wood matters as far as every instrument, whether it be electric, acoustic, is basically essentially an acoustic instrument first. If one of my basses, I usually test them out before I plug them in. If I can play the instrument unplugged with no electronics going and I like what I'm hearing, then it's just going to sound that much better when it's amplified. So I strive to always make the instruments resonate, have good tone acoustically. So I choose woods that some woods sound brighter, some sound warmer. So I try to pair the woods together to achieve an acoustical tone that I will amplify with electronics at a later point.
What woods do you commonly use in your instruments?
Well, over the years, I've used exotic woods from all over the world. However, there are some woods that are becoming more and more endangered. And so I'm kind of focusing at this point more towards North American hardwoods. I use a lot of alder, even basswood, which aren't considered super beautiful woods, but they have wonderful musical tone. So to decorate the wood up, I will put a decorative top of maples, walnuts, things like that that we can get here in the United States. And with maple, for example, there's so many wonderful figured pieces out there. There's burls, there's curly, there's quilted. I actually have lately been using what they call roasted woods. I can get woods that are alder, basswood, but they've been cooked after they've been kiln dried, because they have to be super dry to be used for an instrument. But then they are further treated or tempered in a oven that basically has no oxygen in it. And so therefore they can cook it at 350 degrees or better for 4 to 5 hours, which it basically cooks out all the sugars, the saps, things like this, and it makes the wood. So it just, it's like, it's the same process if you've ever played a vintage instrument and how they just resonate, how they just seems like the wood is really dry. It's basically speeding up that process. And it makes the wood resonate. The acoustical tone on an instrument built with roasted woods is by far better to me and to my ears than woods that I just have air dried over a few years and then I've made into an instrument. They just don't, it just seems like it rings differently. So lately I've been focusing on using roasted woods as much as possible, and definitely as much domestic wood as compared to imported woods.
Brazilian rosewood.
Brazilian rosewoods, basically you can't even import it anymore. It's been, I'm not sure of all the actual details on it, but I don't think it's really been imported since the 80s, and it's because of how they harvested the trees. Currently, they have black ebony, Gabun ebony. You know, it's from Africa, and basically the only country, from my understanding, that still exports black ebony is Cameroon. The way they harvested the trees, I've heard about this, where they knock trees down, and the only way they can see if they're all black or if they have some brown, and brown mixed into the wood was not considered desirable because it didn't make the workers as much money. So they'd knock a tree down, and the only way to tell if it was all black is to look at the stump. Well, if the stump had brown in it, they would leave the tree there to rot, and they'd move on and knock another tree down and see until they find a black one. Now, certain individuals out there, Bob Taylor of Taylor Guitars, for example, has started an export business where he's basically saying that he's going to pay the same amount for ebony that has brown spots as he is for the black. So therefore, the price to the workers, what they're getting paid, is going to be the same, and it's to cut down on the waste. And I'm not in a position where I really can do anything on that scale like he has. He started a whole company about it, but I'm trying to not employ those types of woods if I can. If I get ebony, it's a lot of times going to have brown spots on it. And I'll try to use Makassar ebony, which is from Indonesia, which is not as endangered. And I think it's harvested just as responsibly as it can be for the most part. I only buy from reputable vendors who actually, there's a clear provenance for each of the pieces of wood I get. So I'm not worried that something's been smuggled in. It's something that's important to me that we're not utilizing resources to the point of extinction here on this planet.
So if I was in the market for a custom bass guitar, how would I go about the process of contracting you to build one for me?
The answer to that question is pretty lengthy. Andrew has clients all over the country and overseas, and he consults with them by email and telephone, and they often send him videos of themselves playing so that he can fine-tune his work to their performing style. But it's the local clients who are in the best position when it comes to ordering one of Andrew's guitars, as we hear briefly in this last segment.
If you live local, it's great because you can come by the shop and I can actually carve the neck and you can try it out, play a little bit on it, and I can carve more away and we can hone the neck shape into the customer. The customer can say, okay, that feels great, or I need a little bit more off here. And that's definitely the best way to have a custom instrument made.
That sounds like a very collaborative process in that case.
Oh, it is. The whole thing about me building for a customer is that they're part of the build. They're part of the design team. You know, I actually think the half of the pleasure of having a custom instrument built is the process. These customers get to choose from an endless list of options and specs that they can choose from, and they get to pretty much dictate every little nuance of the instrument. There's a lot of back and forth on my website. I will put pictures, daily progress pictures, up on the website so they can actually see their instrument from starting from blocks of wood all the way up to the, you know, to the finished instrument. And when I actually deliver the instrument, I always include a disc with all of the build pictures on it and everything like that. So it's just kind of, the instrument is also more personalized that way, I feel. And I think the customers get a lot more out of the process than if they just go on the mail order magazine website and click buy now, and a week or two later they get the instruments sent to them. May be set up, may not be set up. You know?
What is your website address?
My website is www.drakecustombass.com, all lowercase.
Well, we'll post that on the KHOI website so people can look at pictures of these basses that you've created.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. What a great interview by Ron Carson. I'm Pat Schlarbaum here with our co-host Kay Puttuck. And now we're happy to welcome our next guest, Edna Clinton, who's the president of National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Welcome, Edna.
Thank you.
You're the featured community service organization this month, Edna, and we're so glad you could come. Earlier this month, we spoke with Devita Harden, one of your members, and she concentrated on the meetings of your members with local law enforcement. And she touched briefly on the game changers, the five game changers of your organization. And I thought maybe we could concentrate more on those today. I suppose the meetings with law enforcement, they would fit in with the public safety and justice. And the other game changers, economic sustainability, education, health, and voting rights.
Yes, that is correct. These are game changers that came out of the strategic plan from the national organization. Mm-hmm. And back in 1909, they commonly called the action the call. And we have chosen as an organization to call the game changers part of the new call. Because while our basic community involvement and engagement is the same, mm-hmm. it has changed tremendously based on societal issues. These five critical areas of changes that affect people's daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
Economic sustainability not only involves finances, it involves people's ability to purchase homes. It involves health care. It involves just your overall level of comfort,
right.
Buying groceries, educational portions. Some, I think, are self-evident. Education is critical to our society as a whole. But there is documentation and data that says that we do not practice equality throughout our society.
Right.
Which should not be a surprise given some of the incidents that have happened in the past 2 to 3 years. The health care area, which is a hot topic since President Obama
right.
was elected with the medical, you know,
Affordable Care Act.
Care Act and everything. And so we have found that these areas are areas that prevent people, and I'm going to use the American dream, even though it's kind of shady right now, the ability to be able to obtain what is commonly known as the American dream. All five of our game changers have a direct impact on
right.
that ability for people.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's some interesting things here where you could say that NAACP is going out on a limb more than other people, perhaps, or many other people are willing to. For example, the death penalty will be abolished. Now, that's the rule in the European community. No country that has a death penalty can be part of the European community. But it's not the case in all the United States. Iowa doesn't have a death penalty, but many do. So the NAACP is sort of out in the forefront there, is a pioneer, you might say, in that area.
Well, in that area and criminal justice,
right.
It is not unusual that the NAACP steps out
mm-hmm.
and leads the way when we have information, documentations, and events in our country that demand attention. Someone has to stand out.
Right.
Someone has to stand up and say, this is not what the United States is all about. In particular, this is not what Iowa is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And you address those issues. Do we always like them? No, we don't. But when we look at things, and it definitely has indications that it's unjust, it's unequal, it's inequitable, And it's just downright horrendous.
Yes.
We have to. We have no choice. We have to stand up and say, this is wrong.
And something else I noticed that's interesting is ban the box policy. That's very interesting. Perhaps you could explain exactly what that is to people.
Well, on many applications...
job applications, you mean?
Yes. Many job applications, there's a portion of it that asked if you have been arrested or convicted, and it indicates... It started off being a felony charge, and now I understand that if you have a traffic violation, that it can be covered under this area.
Yeah, so there's a little box which you make
a check.
It's a little
box that you make a check, and then if you say yes to the indication, it wants to know why,
right,
what it is, and how did it transpire. We have found that this box eliminates people who have made poor choices in their lives,
right,
have paid society for their debt. However, when they come back into society, this box prevents them from...
getting a job.
Yes.
Yeah.
They don't even get in the interview process,
right,
because people say that they don't use it to discriminate, but in fact, it is a discriminatory practice.
Right.
And we feel that it is not something that you need to know. If the person
before
is qualified.
Before the interview, anyway.
Right,
yeah.
Before the interview, anyway. Right. We are not so unrealistic as to think that, you know, if you have paid your debt in society and your debt to society was because you robbed a bank and then you apply for a job at a bank, that the bank should not know that you robbed a bank. I mean, that's just common sense to me. But when you use these boxes to prevent individuals from gaining gainful employment, you also impact all of the other game changers that we talk about, and you look at it, it's a vicious cycle.
Right.
They come back into society. They want to take care of themselves. They can't find a job. So how are they going to take
exactly.
care of themselves?
Exactly.
Generally,
yeah, it almost forces them into a
right.
criminal career.
It forces
career.
Recidivism. That's
right.
what it does.
Right.
You know, and we feel like if you ban the box and you really do give the individual an opportunity
to talk. Yeah. In other words, people can ask these questions at the interview, but they can't exclude them from coming to an interview and talking. Obviously, they can be asked about the mistakes they've made, but they should be given that chance.
Right.
Sometimes, so banning the box stops them from being excluded without a hearing, you might say, by
that
the
That is block. Correct.
Right.
You know, proven guilty before a trial.
Yes. Yes. I wish we had more time, Edna. Maybe we can continue this conversation another time. I really do appreciate that you could come in today at such short notice. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. We'll just have a very brief music break before we have our final guest, Alison Wharton. Now, we're happy to welcome our regular guest for the last Monday of the month, Alison Wharton of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome, Alison.
Thank you. Good morning.
So what's in store for us this fall?
Well, you know, school has started, and we kind of change gears into the fall activities, and there's lots going on around Ames this fall. On Friday evening, September 9th, the Campus Town Action Association will host their movie night in Campus Town. And this has become an annual tradition. They will be showing an outside movie at the St. Thomas Aquinas parking ramp.
It's the parking lot.
Have a ramp now, and so up on the top level,
it's
only two or three levels.
Uh-huh.
But they'll set up a screen, and they'll be showing Zootopia, the Disney movie. They'll have cookies, popcorn, and Rice Krispie treats available while they last, mm-hmm. and several food vendors.
A throwback to the old drive-in movie.
Exactly. Exactly.
But it's all outdoors.
All outdoors, yep. Very family-friendly atmosphere.
Right.
So,
that won't actually be in their cars, though.
People bring your blankets and your chairs, and you can bring your own snacks and have a fun evening on September 9th. And then on Sunday, September 11th, the Great Ames Adventure Race happens. And that's an early morning at Ada Hayden Park. That you can paddle, bike, and run. You can either do it as an individual and do all three legs of the race. Or
and that would be a triathlon, right?
It is kind of a triathlon, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Three.
Not your traditional with paddling on a canoe or a kayak, biking and running rather mm-hmm. than swimming. It's the kayaking. Mm-hmm. So you can compete solo or in tandem, or you can actually do three people on a team and each do one leg of it. And that's on Sunday, September 11th up at Ada Hayden Park. Thursday, September 15th through Sunday, the 18th, is the Maximum Ames Music Festival.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw. It's the 6th annual, which I can't believe, 6 years already, all happening in downtown Ames. The four-day celebration will feature over 100 acts, all within the walking distance of the Main Street Cultural District. And numerous genres, wonderful venues.
Just a fabulous event.
It is. It's amazing.
They do a great job.
The great variety. So that's Thursday the 15th through Sunday the 18th. Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad does a fun event each fall, a family fun event with Thomas the Tank Engine. And they bring Thomas the Tank Engine out to the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad. And so your ticket for the day includes a train ride with Thomas, as well as a variety of Thomas and friend-themed entertainment, including storytelling and video viewing, temporary tattoos, the Imagination Station, arts and crafts. And you get to meet Sir Topham Hatt, who is the controller of the railway on the island of Sodor. So that will be weekends in September, the 17th, 18th, the 23rd, 24th, and 25th.
So that's two consecutive weekends there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fun thing for children by the sound of it. But I found that the Scenic Valley Railroad, it's nice for older people, too. This was years ago, but my husband took his elderly parents on.
Yes.
With people with limited mobility.
Yes, it's very
that train ride is a very nice thing.
It's fabulous.
It is beautiful.
You really see the Des Moines River Valley in all its splendor
amazing.
That time of year.
And this in the fall is always wonderful.
Right.
They do a Sunday afternoon dessert train, and they do evening dinner trains, as well as mm-hmm. the regular rides every weekend. So, yeah, definitely get out there and take advantage of that. Whether it's Thomas or just a regular train ride.
It's a great ride.
Mm-hmm. It is. Of course, it's Iowa State football season, the team kicks off the season against in-state rival UNI on September 3rd, and there's 7 home games this fall, so get out and enjoy some Iowa State football. We have a new event that's happening over in Boone. Forte Studios is hosting a Battle of the Bands. And Midwest bands will battle to win a free album recording with Forte Studios.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's an outdoor festival-style concert where the audience participants will vote for their favorite band during the afternoon. And that will reduce the competition to 6 bands for evening concerts. And they'll have 12 bands competing and a beer garden and food vendors. And this is all right in downtown Boone on Saturday, September 24th. Of course, we have the Octagon Arts Festival every September. This year, September 25th. It's always a wonderful Sunday afternoon or Sunday all day event. This is the 46th year of promoting visual arts, children's arts, and performing arts. They figure they have about 14,000 attendees each year, and over 100 professional artists from across the Midwest. So, and it's beautiful, high quality original artwork in a variety of media.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. You know, there's a lot of happy people, but an outreach for our artistic community that the Octagon provides.
Yeah. It's a destiny. Now, I noticed it's rain or shine.
Rain
how
or shine.
How do they detect the artwork if it gets rained on?
The vendors all bring their little pop-up tents, and a lot of them have sides, so they're prepared. I remember a couple years ago, they had a lot of wind, and there was some minimal damage to the artwork, but for the most part, I think the vendors are prepared for that. The artists know that it's rain or shine. The nice thing is it's on pavement because it's on Main Street, on the street, so you don't have to worry about walking through, muddy grass or anything like that. But Sunday, September 25th, and I think it's 10 to 5. It really is all day.
Mm-hmm.
Then Thursday, September 29th is Music Walk in downtown Ames. And this is a great way to showcase downtown businesses as well as local musicians. Downtown businesses feature a musician performing on the sidewalks or in their store, and it allows you to wander up and down Main Street and get in the businesses to see what they're all about as well as enjoying the music.
Yeah, and that's usually a very much fun event.
Yes, yes.
And some businesses offer ice cream and treats.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, sometimes if you haven't been in a store, it's a nice way to just get in the door and see a little bit about what it's about without feeling like you have to spend some money but just give you a chance to go in and see the artist and see the businesses. So, the Ames Community Arts Council is hosting a studio tour, and this is the first weekend in October, October 8th and 9th. And you will tour throughout the community, seeing local artists, and experience live demonstrations. You can ask questions and see how their work is done. This is, a great way to get out and learn about the artists and learn about their craft. There's not a single location, but instead you travel from studio to studio and provide your own transportation, but pick up a map either at Worldly Goods or at one of the studios during their open hours. Our website will have lots of information about the locations. They received a community grant this year to promote this event, so we're happy to support them on that. So throughout the day on Saturday and Sunday, October 8th and 9th. We mentioned Day Out with Thomas at the Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad. They also do a Pumpkin Express train in October on Saturdays in October, and you get to take the family on a hour and 30-minute journey across the tall Bass Point Creek High Bridge and the Des Moines River Bridge. And
it's very spectacular.
Yes. Then once you're out at the end of the row, end of the line, there's a pumpkin patch, and you can select the perfect pumpkin and then bring it back with you on the train. And on the return trip, there's activities and treats, and it's kind of a fun twist on collecting pumpkins, going to the pumpkin patch on the railroad.
You know, I have to say this. I've never seen a pumpkin, an actual pumpkin, till I came to America.
Not a
pumpkin. And when I read Cinderella, the coach turning into a pumpkin, I used to look at the pictures of that pumpkin and think, what's that?
A pumpkin?
What's that?
Amazing, isn't it?
Well, they're incredible things, pumpkins, when you think about it.
Yeah,
yeah, they can be crude or they can become works of art.
Amazing.
As far as the carving goes.
Yes.
What a great way to get a story about your pumpkin. And with the kids.
Ride on the train.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a new event coming up in October in Campus Town called Crafts and Drafts, and it hopes to appeal to those who like attending craft brew festivals and don't mind a little DIY project. So it's a family-friendly afternoon, and they'll feature food from local vendors, craft beer from local breweries, and some crafts for all ages. So while you're enjoying the beers and the company, you can also have a chance to do a little craft project.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Saturday, October 15th. And then the next weekend in October is Oktoberfest in downtown Ames. sampled 20 different beers from and you get a commemorative tasting cup. Enjoy some polka music, some dancing, some great German food. They have their Guten Tag games and much more. The
Do
fun
you want
starts.
Guten Tag games.
Guten Tag games. There are all kinds of fun carnival games and interact. They do barrel rolling and just kind of some fun, crazy German-inspired games. And they start at 9 o'clock with the Harvest Market. The live music and authentic German food starts around 1 and continues on till 10. And the beer tasting starts at 4. So dig out your lederhosen and come join the fun on Main Street.
Are we called drindles?
Exactly. And I'm amazed at how many German costumes they come up with for this Oktoberfest. And then don't forget to get out and do things like ride the High Trestle Trail. Got some wonderful bike trails and in the area. And we even have Trailside Rental, who's located just 2 blocks from the trail, that you can rent a bike. And they have adult and kid-sized bikes. They have tandems. They have bikes. They have trikes, and they have trailers. So if you don't have a bike, there is an option at Trailside Rentals in Madrid, just about 2 blocks from the trail, where you can rent a bike. And Ryman Gardens is continuing their Nature Connects Art with Lego Bricks through the month of October. And it's
I haven't
wonderful.
Seen those yet. I
must you need to get over 500,000 Lego bricks.
And I live really near there, so I've got no excuse, and I remember.
So take advantage of all the educational opportunities, as well as just getting out and enjoying the Lego sculptures. And the second Wednesday of every month, all guests may visit Ryman Gardens free of charge. So that's a new program that they have.
The second Wednesday.
The second Wednesday of the month.
Okay,
so mark your calendar and get out to Ryman Gardens and enjoy the Lego bricks and all of the other fall activities that they have going on.
And if you get out there the second Wednesday, then you'll probably return.
Exactly. You know, that's their hope, and I think that's very true.
And I should add something here, which I didn't know before I experienced this. If you want to see the butterflies, go on a sunny day, because if it's not sunny, the butterflies just seem to roost. They don't. Yeah. They're not fluttering around.
And it's so fabulous
it's
when you're in there and they're fluttering
magical.
All around you, and they land on your shoulders. And
it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful. So we've got some great things to do in the community, and we just hope you take advantage of them and get out and see what all there is to do.
Yeah, well, that's just it's so. I really love doing this program, actually, because I learn all
you
this
learn
stuff.
You learn so much, right. So if you're learning something, I'm sure everyone else that's listening is learning something.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank
Keep
you.
Up the good work.
You're welcome.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum, one of your hosts today. We've just been hearing from Allison Walter of the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Earlier, we heard from Carol Raffsenberger, lawyer for the Standing Rock Protectors, Andrew Drake of Drake Custom Bass and Guitar, and Edna Clinton, president of the NAACP.
Our theme music is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production and training workshop, and we're always being trained as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Or just drop by our studios in downtown Ames. We are always welcome. If you enjoyed this show, please tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. This show was engineered by Evan Taylor. You can listen to this show and all our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. And you'll find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, is able to post it. Thank you, Ron, and thank you for that interview today.
And KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org, where you can also find archives of KHOI's previous shows. And now stay tuned for Morning Masterpieces. And please remember that you, as our listener, are the most important part of local talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations help to make it all possible.
Thank you for listening,
and we'll see you again on the radio.